Hi guys, this is TJ. Welcome to New Zealand Mysteries, the podcast. Thanks for being here. This week on Kiwi Television, a program called Cold Case, started up again. And the first case that it featured is a story about Timothy Pridding, who went missing in 1994 from Dunedin. There's a lot of information to recap in the program. This is a copy of the video that was made for YouTube, but I'm bringing it to you guys on here, so please enjoy the show. Hey guys, I'm TJ. Welcome back to New Zealand Mysteries. Thank you so much for being here with me. It is much appreciated. We were really lucky a couple of nights ago, Tuesday the 9th of November, a program called Cold Case featured back on New Zealand television. This program obviously features cold cases from around New Zealand, and we're going to take a look and recap that program tonight and hope that some of our viewers will be able to provide some information to help solve this case. The case is the disappearance of Timothy Pridding from Dunedin, New Zealand, in 1994. So what I'm going to be doing for this case is I'm on the police website about the case here. It's very, very brief what they have laid out. So I'm going to sort of go off here, but I have written down a bunch of notes from the program as well. So we'll do that. But if I do look down, please remember I'm just reading my notes. Now there's a couple of places that get featured in the story, so I kind of wanted to show you what part of New Zealand we're looking at if you're not don't know. Okay, so this is the South Island of New Zealand, and it takes place down here. We've got Dunedin and Oamaru. Dunedin is Otapoti in Māori. It's the second largest city in the South Island of New Zealand after Christchurch and the principal city of the Otago region, with an estimated population of 105,000 as of June 2021. So not a great big place. This place, Oamaru, is a lot smaller. Oamaru is the largest town in North Otago in the South Island of New Zealand. It is the main town in the Waitaki district. And Oamaru has a population of just 13,850. So we're not talking about big places here. But let's get into it. So it says here, Dunedin mechanic 34-year-old Timothy Pridding vanished without a trace in November 1994. The last confirmed sighting of him was on the morning of 8th of November. Now, Timothy lived in Dunedin, and he was adopted by his parents, and he has a sibling. He was quite transient and often travelled between Dunedin and Oamaru. It was often for him to go from one place to another because he had friends in both. And because of that, his dad didn't report him missing until the 2nd of December. So a couple of weeks gone past. They actually last spoke to him on the 14th of October. So there's quite a bit of time gone by when it was reported to police, and it wasn't sort of picked up by a detective until 2 weeks after the initial missing persons file was raised by his dad. In all apparent circumstances, from what I've seen, his family, his parents and him had a really, really close relationship. They were concerned a few months before he went missing because he had come home quite a few times with stitches and had been beaten up. When the police actually picked up the case, they were immediately concerned about some of the components in this case. Timothy was a low-level cannabis dealer. He, like we said, was a mechanic, and he often worked on other people's cars as well. There was lots of rumours at the time about that he had fixed a few people's cars and gotten the money for it and never given it back. And there were some rumours about dirty drug deals or getting drugs on tick and not coming up with the money and that sort of thing. He had a dog. It was a German Shepherd, beautiful German Shepherd called Czar, and they were pretty much inseparable. Before he went missing for a couple of months, he'd actually been staying in Oamaru with some mates. They'd all had a chat and they all wanted to get out of town. They wanted to go north and get out of Oamaru completely, and he was really excited about going with them. He had to, however, go back to Dunedin because he had a few loose ends that he needed to tie up. He got a flat for him and his dog Czar. In all accounts, it doesn't seem like he stayed there though. He ended up going to stay with a female friend in Bayview Road in Dunedin. So on the night of the 7th, he stayed with this female friend in Bayview Road, and on the morning of the 8th of November, a associate came to that house, apparently overheard that they were going to go and check out a cannabis plot in Trotter's Gorge, which we'll look about, which is about 70 k's north of the city. He was witnessed putting a shovel or a spade into the boot of the associate's car, and he said to the lady or to his female friend, "Can you please look after the dog for a couple of hours? I'm going to be back." Of course, he left his car there, and they left in a Nissan Bluebird. No, they didn't. They left in a Nissan Bluebird. Come on, we've got to have something funny, don't we, guys? They left in a Nissan Bluebird car, the associate and Timothy. So Trotter's Gorge, which they were talking about, which was overheard as a recreational area with dense bush, limestone caves, and warnings to remind members of the public to stay on marked tracks. And if we have a look here, if my computer obviously doesn't decide to do the funky chicken, because sometimes that happens, we can see it here. So about 70k out of Dunedin here. A friend had also said that he was actually quite worried about his safety around this time when he returned back to Dunedin. He had not been parking his car on the street because he didn't want to be seen, and he was changing cars all the time. But the police in the program said that this is quite natural behavior for a low-level cannabis dealer, or a big one for that matter. So that was the last sighting of Timothy. The associate was the last person to see him alive, and when he caught up with police, or when police asked him, "Where did you take Timothy?" he told them that he took them through Dunedin to the Northern Motorway and dropped him off because apparently Timothy said he wanted to go to Oamaru. So let's take a quick look at where he means. So the associate said he dropped him off about around here, close to the Dunedin Botanic Gardens, because this here is Highway 1, and that will take you down to Oamaru and out towards Trotter's Gorge and the rest of the South Island going north. Police immediately wondered if drug debts and car debts had caught up with Timothy. We know that he was, like I say, a low-level cannabis dealer. It was said that he often got drugs on tick, meaning not paying for them right away, and didn't pay people in the end and took the drugs. It's also said that he got paid to fix people's cars, and he got paid ahead of time, and he did not end up fixing those cars. So there was heaps of rumours about these sort of things. Police believed from the beginning that harm had come to Tim. There was no movement on his credit card. Sorry, there wouldn't be a credit card, but maybe his account, since early November. So believing the people that he came across or associated with debts and drugs and so forth, they immediately jumped on this and knew that it had to do with the people that he hung around. These people were known to be violent and to use violence to settle debts and that sort of thing, and also to use intimidation. Police started to get a few little bits of information coming in at first, but not a lot, and they know that they were getting fed a lot of misinformation and lies from people in the community and people associated with Timothy. Through a friend or a witness, police actually found out that he had an opportunity to get some hash from a dealer in Oamaru, on tick, of course, and he had about five or six matchbox kind of shape blocks of this hash, which were worth about $300 each. Police revealed at the time that he was not known to them in Oamaru at all, so they sort of knew that his drug dealing was on the lower level of stuff because, yeah, otherwise they would have heard something about this guy. Police also revealed, like we talked about before, that in the months prior to him going missing, he had some beatings. He had been beaten up a couple of times, and that was related to taking money for cars that he hadn't fixed and drugs that he had not paid for. So, yeah, he didn't always do things right, let's say that. Police kept getting the information about Trotter's Gorge from quite a few people. Some of his friends said that he'd actually been out there and had started preparing for his plot to be planted because it was the beginning of the season. So police actually went out there and they did search this. They did an extensive aerial search and found absolutely nothing at all. People also were sent in to search on the ground level and also found nothing related to Timothy at all. Police also searched the Bayview Road address where he'd been staying with this lady friend. Nothing came of that either. Another tip that they got was that he was up in an old cement works which had been abandoned, and they searched this thoroughly as well. There was no sign of him. There were rumours about a gang being involved, and this gang pad was close to the cement works, but they don't think that the gang had anything to do with Timothy's disappearance either. Some rumours started to surface that Timothy owed $30,000 to a dealer in Oamaru for drugs or hash, which is the same thing, of course. But that's a lot of money. Police said that they don't think this was right at all. Like I said, those little boxes or box matchbox size bits of hash were around $300 each, nowhere near 30 grand. And he was a low-level dealer, not someone big. And so they weren't really into this and believing this at all. Now, the drug dealer that he had got the hash off had actually gone to the Bayview Road address after Tim went missing, looking to find Tim because he'd been ripped off and wanted his money or his drugs back. Police said this guy was actually really truthful, and they didn't think that he had anything to do with Timothy's disappearance. Police about this time started to focus on the associate who went and took Timothy in the Nissan Bluebird. When he was asked what he was doing on that day, he provided an alibi. A female friend, apparently, he was having coffee with. The female friend initially told police that was right, but then she later came forward and said there's no way that he could have been having a coffee with her. She wasn't there. It was impossible. Around this time, there were lots of people ringing the police, telling them that they were seeing Timothy in Invercargill. Lots of sightings. And police didn't hold much into these, but, you know, you've got to listen to everything. It became quite apparent to the police that the Nissan Bluebird driver, the associate, was telling police one thing and his mates another. You know, after his mates came forward. He was actually telling his friends that he had dropped Timothy off in Palmerston, which is a town between Oamaru and Dunedin. And he was just inconsistent. He kept saying one thing. He kept changing his mind. He still was telling police that he dropped him off at that northern motorway, but then his mates to Palmerston. And on the 28th of December, he actually came to talk to police. He wanted to tell police that he was aware that some people were spreading rumours and lies about him, and they think that he was getting worried about his story and that it was not matching up. Therefore, that's why he went to the police to give them a bit of a heads up about these rumours. The associate with the Nissan also could not be accounted for during a 3 to 4 hour period during the day, or a bit longer. It's not known exactly what time they left the Bayview house, about 10 to 11, or between 10 and 11, I should say, in the morning. And the associate driver was not seen again till 3 or 4 in the afternoon. So there is a bit of time that he is unaccounted for sure. Police started to believe that the rumours about the sightings of Timothy and Invercargill could actually be traced back to associates of the driver and friends of the driver. So that was another thing that was a red flag, you know what I mean? It was apparent that his mates had been lying and encouraging this guy, his friends, and intimidating them to tell police that they'd seen this guy in Invercargill, but it wasn't true. Police also believed that the driver had received some of the blocks of hash on tick. So not only had Timothy not paid for it, then he'd given it to the driver and he hadn't paid for it. So sort of a bit of a chain going there. Because mates in that kept coming forward and telling police that he had a lot of hashish in his possession after Timothy went missing. So that's a really big flag. The rumours about the $30,000 that Timothy owed to a drug dealer in Oamaru could also be linked back to mates of this driver. And it was known that some people lied about that as well and were encouraged to do so by the driver. In 1995, the Nissan Bluebird was seized and searched by police, but nothing could link that car or the driver to Timothy. There was nothing found. In 2003, Tim was actually declared dead by the coroner. Even though, you know, that I guess gives some little bit of closure to the family, the pain and grief of not knowing what Timothy, you know, where he was or what had happened to him, and still not being able to bring him home to rest, that poor family still had to deal with that. The sad thing is that his parents actually died a while ago, so they never got to know what happened to their son. A few other things came to light. Apparently, that driver actually went to Bayview Road at some stage and tried to take Timothy's car that was left there. Now, the lady there had called police and driver was arrested, but apparently she got intimidated and actually dropped the charges. The driver also told police that Timothy had left a note in his letterbox the day after he had seen him, which is on the 9th of November, and, sorry, December, I should say, no, November, hang on, sorry, the 9th of November. And apparently this note said that he was going to lie low for a little while, he'd be going away for a while, had to get out of town type of thing, and apparently he threw it in the fire, so police never got to see that note. If this guy was innocent, do you think he would keep that note to show police? Just saying. So it appears that the driver has been boasting about his involvement in the case and the disappearance of Timothy. He has told people that he did it and he knows what happened. He's told people that Timothy had to dig his own grave. Really disgusting things like that. He also made comments one night with a bunch of mates after he'd seen the case on Crime Watch. You know, there's only two reasons. Either this guy wanted to boost his reputation, his bad reputation, or he actually did it. So, what was the truth? Just quickly, please, if you have any info about this case, please call Cold Case on 0800 2653 2273, which is 0800 Cold Case. If you have any information about the cases I cover, contact Crime Stoppers 0800 555 111, which is anonymous. Please, any case suggestions, you can get hold of me at nzmissing@gmail.com. In the description box below, I'm going to have ways you can donate to the channel, which I really appreciate because it helps me keep going. Please like the video, give us a thumbs up, and subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell to all so that you get any updates as well. Thank you very much. Even, the articles that I use or the police page here is going to be in the description box below as well, so you can go and have a look yourself. Let's get back to it. The man went to prison, the driver went to prison in 1996, and that's when a few people started to come forward to tell information because they weren't quite as intimidated or scared about this guy. However, they never got the information that they needed to link the driver to the disappearance of Timothy. The man has since moved out of the area. He's been gone for many, many years, and it's they think that he's not so intimidating anymore and doesn't have the reputation that he used to have. In 1996, the driver went to prison, and that's when a few things started to come, tips came to the police and so forth, but they never got that information that they needed to link the driver to the disappearance of Timothy. Now, the guy has been gone from the area for many, many years, apparently, and he doesn't have the bad reputation of intimidation that he used to have, and sort of that hold on people and that fear. So people can come forward now. They may have not been able to do the right thing back then, but they can definitely do the right thing now and come forward. Police want to discover the truth, what happened to Timothy, and locate the remains. There's still family and friends out there that want to put him to rest and want to know what happened. It's been a long time. Friendships change, people change, allegiances change. Someone knows something, and even if it's just the littlest bit of information, or something you've heard, or were told, or you remember, anything at all, please let the police know. I'm going to also put a link to TVNZ On Demand where you can actually go and watch the cold case if you missed it, the program. But please share this around as much as you can. We want to reach as much people as we can, and we want to reach those people that have the answers. Thank you very much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. Be safe out there and be kind to one another, and I will see you next time. Thank you, guys.